Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking. This is a special episode. We've got Ben Plenger from Mountain Bike Strength Factory back to answer your questions. Here's everything you need to know about getting strong and fit for the 2018 season, whether that's riding or racing. Have a listen, and hopefully there's some useful information in there for you. Also, don't forget to give us a follow on social media. Just look for Downtime Podcast on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and you'll keep up to date with all our upcoming episodes and what we're up to over the year. Plenty of good stuff to come. Also, if you've got time, an iTunes review goes a long way. We'd really appreciate it. Head over there, let us know what you think of the podcast. And as ever, keep in touch. I love getting your messages and hearing what you're getting from the podcast, so please keep that up. Okay, without further ado, here's a special episode with Ben Plenger from Mountain Bike Strength Factory. Ben Plenger, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Chris. Happy New Year, mate. Thanks for having me back.
Cheers, man. How was your Christmas? You had a good break?
Yeah, really good. Like, pretty standard. You know, lots of family, lots of food, caught a cold. But yeah, back on it now, feeling good, riding my bike again, training again, and yeah, back to work.
Wicked, good to hear. So we put some social media messages out just before Christmas asking what people wanted to know about training coming into the new year. It's that kind of time of year, lots of New Year's resolutions and people entering races and getting ready for the year. And we had a pretty good response, so we're gonna try and work our way through those. We've kind of group them into some common themes, so hopefully that'll help us get through them, but we'll do our best. If we don't get to your question, then apologies, maybe we'll do a follow-up, but yeah, we'll get cracking. So the first topic that came up was warm up and cool down. So Oscar Carlson and Scott C. Brown both asked about that. So Oscar was interested to know what sort of warm up or stretching you should do before a ride or a race, and Scott was wondering, you know, is there much benefit to stretching, and if so, what kind of essential stretches should you be doing rather than just sorting out your muddy wet kit and jumping in a warm car?
So basically what I'd say here is to don't overcomplicate it. Before you ride, there's a definite benefit to doing a warm-up. Like, that is without doubt, and the older you get, the greater benefit you'll get from that sort of thing, the more it will help you at the start of the ride and also at the end. So when I say don't overcomplicate it, just think about movement, okay? And if you take your body and generally you've probably driven to the trails, or maybe you've been at work all day and then you're riding from home. But, you know, if you've been sat down for a while, then you're not really best placed to go and ride your bike, especially with a dynamic sport like mountain biking. So just try and move your body in all different directions. Do some leg swings up against the car, you know, do some like stepping motions, swing your arms around, get a little rotation through the spine, and all that sort of thing. It doesn't have to be complicated. Just move your body in through all its joints, through all their range, basically. Then the other thing I'd always say is that, you know, knowing your body, you'll have some specific issues probably where you may be prone to a tight calf or a lower back or something like that. And that obviously then is worthwhile spending a bit more time on, you know, and you might have a couple of little exercises or stretches you like to do at home. Why not do them when you get out of the car, you know, just to loosen off before you go riding. I think Scott there was also asking about after a race or event or even just a big ride. And I would certainly say it's worthwhile doing like a cool down. So, you know, if you think downhill and enduro, or even a lot of like trail centers, they all finish with like a really big downhill blast, okay, which is awesome. We love it and it's a massive buzz. But if you're working real hard down there, then you're stopped dead basically from heart rate real high to heart rate real low, and your muscles really working to then doing nothing. It's actually not very good for your recovery. So it's worthwhile taking 5-10 minutes just to spin around the car park or something like that at low intensity, trying to just breathe and sort of get back to a more relaxed state gradually.
Okay, good pointers. So the stretches that you talked about, are you thinking more dynamic, kind of moving stuff rather than static stretches?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, people get too hung up on details. They're like, oh, but you shouldn't stretch before exercise, or, you know, that's old fashioned. And but yeah, move is what I would say. So dynamic movement based warm up. But you can, if you need to, then you can hold a couple of stretches for a couple of, you know, specific positions. Like if you've got a particular tight area, then you can do that. If, you know, if you feel that it's good for you. Like I always say to the people I coach, if it feels good, do it. It's probably good for you, you know?
Okay.
So keep it simple, yeah.
Yeah. And if your ride involves like a pedal up at the start before anything gets too serious, is that enough to kind of get the legs moving and then maybe do some kind of upper body dynamic work when you get to the top, or how do you feel about that?
You could certainly do that. I would be tempted to, you know, if you just want to, you know, on a cold day or whatever, you might just want to get going, you know, and spin up the hill. That's fine. And you can just do some movement-based warm-up at the top of the hill. But it's worth getting off the bike, I think, to take a couple of minutes to do that. You know, so much of controlling a bike and technical terrain comes from the lower body and your hips in particular. So the more freely that you can be moving, the better.
Okay, good advice. Cheers. Right, let's move on to the next topic. This was a big one. A lot of people, I think, are interested in this and suffer from the same problem. So we're talking about bang for the buck, you know, people that are short of time. So Will Cook, Cat Crompton, Collective Tom, Tub Thumped, Dave JMO 75, Joe Lochran and Jason Hillmeyer all wanted to know a bit about how they can get the, you know, the best bang for the buck. How can they make the best use of their time? Often people have got, you know, a lot of work commitments, or they've got kids to look after at home and all that kind of stuff. What are your recommendations for being time efficient with your training?
Okay, yeah. So some of those guys were very specific, like, should I work on strength, or should I work on mobility, or indoor bike, or outdoor, or whatever. Now, obviously, a lot of that depends on your circumstances and whether you've got good riding near your house, what kit you've got at home, whether you've got access to a gym and all of that. But what I would say is it needs to start with the self-awareness of where you are, you know, and what you're trying to achieve. So, you know, if you just like riding your bike, then that's fine. But when you go out riding with your mates, you know, what do you think is the thing that lets you down? Is it your skills? Is it the climbing? Is it the, you know, do you get dropped when they sprint off because you're not very strong and powerful? Or do you have to stop because of your arm pump? Or, you know, and it's all that sort of thing where you need to do a little, you know, self-awareness exercise to figure out what is most important for you. Because, you know, to the person who maybe they work a really physical job, they're a builder or someone, you know, then actually for them, they probably need to go to the gym and do any strength work. So they're lifting stuff all day. They need to do some mobility work and you know, get some time on a bike. Or the person who maybe does a desk job and that sort of thing, then maybe they need to get in the gym and get a bit stronger, you know, to build up that strong riding position that's then going to help them when they go out riding. And at the end of the day, like, we're in this, you know, we're all talking about this because we all love mountain biking. And I always say this to everyone I coach, is that yes, I'll write you a training program or whatever, but if you get the opportunity to go and ride some really good trails with your mates, then always take it, you know. So if you can go night riding with your friends after work one evening, then for me, you know, that's normally better than doing like a turbo session or something, unless you enjoy that sort of thing in your garage. I guess identify where you're at, identify what you need to work on most, and then try and fit that into your time available. I'd say, you know, this is a real, I guess, common thing these days, isn't it? Like, modern life is like busy, super, super busy.
Yeah.
People take on loads of stuff. And, you know, my life's just got busy. I've got a 7-month-old daughter now, you know, and stuff. Life is different, you know. But it's about like realizing what's important to you for your like long-term health, both mentally and physically. And it's like trying to make time for the important stuff, like looking after yourself, and you know, making time to ride your bike and to train and all that sort of thing. And yeah, not maybe staying at work late if you don't have to and things like that. So I think I've rambled on a bit there, but if I go down a little bit on the list, where are we? Yeah, so there's people talking here about only being able to get on the bike once every 2 weeks. What sort of exercise can I do indoors to keep my general fitness up? So, you know, this person says, was it Dave JMO 75? So he's going to the gym already, you know, presumably to keep nice and strong, but doesn't get to ride much. And so, you know, indoors, how can you boost that fitness? So you've got things like the rower, or you could do some sort of circuit training or things like that. But no matter what sort of training you're doing, just try and address the whole body is what I would say. Just try and think, right, I've got limited time, so I'm going to try and do a bit of everything with a reasonable intensity and with just a clear plan of what I want to do.
Yeah. Are there any kind of maybe simple or cheap bits of kit that you recommend people having at home, like a couple of kettlebells or anything like that?
Yeah. So you could do an awful lot with just a pull-up bar, you know, that goes in a doorway. And these days they've got a lot better design. You used to have to like screw into the door frame, and if you rented, it was a pain in the ass. But these days there's some real good ones. You pick them up on Argos or, you know, on the internet or whatever. Because when you do body weight training, which is amazing because you need so little kit, it's really hard to do any pulling exercises. It's all pushing, and you need something to pull against. So a pull-up bar is a really good thing to have, to allow you to do those pulling exercises, which also allows you to strengthen your grip, which is really important. Mm-hmm. And for a bit more money, a suspension trainer is a really good investment as well.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's loads of different brands. Some of them, you know, the ones that are like 30 quid or whatever, in my experience, they're 30 quid for a reason, and like the carabiners break and they fray and, you know, and they're not very good. But it's normally worth spending, you know, it's probably going to cost you closer to 100, I think, to get a decent quality one that will last you. You know, I've had my TRX I've had for 11 years now. And so that, to me, that's 120 quid or whatever well spent.
And so that, for people that aren't familiar with suspension trainers, can you just describe what that is?
Yeah, it's effectively like webbing strap, like nylon strap, like you might have on your backpack or something like that, with some handles on, and you can fix it to anything really. So you can fix it to a tree, to a door, to your pull-up bar. And the number of exercises you can do on these are really limitless. There's so much you can do on them. They're really versatile, upper body, lower body, core, as well as some really good stretching and mobility as well. And they pack down real small. So probably a size, they pack down to about the size of a coat or something like that, I'd say, wrapped up in a ball. Mm-hmm. And so you can travel with them as well, which is really useful for a lot of people.
Okay, cool. So a chin-up bar and a TRX or some kind of suspension trainer at home is a good way to go if you know, short of time to get out on the bike or get to a gym.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it doesn't have to be complicated. Like there's a million exercises out there on YouTube for the suspension trainer. You know, just go through, think about what you want to do. So you want to do something for your legs, something for your upper body pulling, something upper body pushing, something for your core. And if you could just like make yourself a basic program, start working on it, concentrate on your form, record how you get on, and then you'll learn how to move better, you'll grow stronger, and then you can maybe go for some more advanced exercises or make the program longer or something like that. So just keep it simple, basically.
Nice. Yeah, and really easy to set up, I guess, as well at home. So if you've only got a few minutes, you can still set up quickly and get some work done.
Yeah, well, they're not very obtrusive. You could just leave one hooked up the whole time, you know. It depends who you live with and stuff. But yeah, get on it, or you know, take it to the park, do it out in nature, put it on a tree. You know, that's awesome. You know, people don't get maybe mountain bikers do actually, but I think the general public don't get enough nature in their lives.
Very true. Very true. And then, so John Loren, sorry, said if you had 1 hour on the bike 3 times a week to train for enduro, what would be a good training regime? Are there three kind of different 1 hour sessions that you would recommend that people try and get done in a week?
Yeah. So basically, again, it's that awareness. Like, what do you need to work on? Does he struggle to make the transitions to get to the top of the hill? I.e., you know, that longer climbing fitness, that aerobic fitness, or, you know, is it a sprint and things like that? So it starts with a self-awareness always, which is why I test all my athletes and interview them before we start programming them. But so what you've got to think about is then, you know, he's talking about a 3 months period from now until that first race. So you're always going to work back from the event. Okay. And the closer to the event, the more similar your training should be to that event. Okay. So right now, 3 months out, it can be a bit more general. And then as it gets closer, the things like the sprints will become more specific. So maybe at the moment, he might want to work on his maximum sprinting power by doing a 5-6 second sprint, resting 5 minutes and going again to work on that top end, if that's something he identifies.
Mm-hmm.
And then closer to the race, he needs to make it a bit more race specific by doing a series of sprints more closer together, so that it's way more challenging, it's way harder. So sprint, short recovery, sprint, short recovery. So it's that sprint repeat, which is so important in enduro, and it's, you know, one of the key determinants along with skill for success, basically. So if you're talking about three sessions a week, you know, some sort of sprint-based session, you know, with the progression I've talked about there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some kind of interval session where you're working more around the 1 to 3 minute mark. So you're doing maybe minute on, minute off, or, you know, 3 minutes on, two off, or, you know, you can change that again as you go.
Yeah.
That's sort of more the VO2 max style intervals.
And so when you say on, how on do you mean? Are we talking 9 or 10 out of 10, like as hard as you can go for that minute?
Yeah, yeah. So if you've got the ability to monitor your intensity using a power meter or a heart rate monitor, then that would be for those 1 to 3 minute jobs, they're going to be zone 5. If you're familiar with zones. Now, if you're not, then probably what you're looking at is about 8 out of 10 effort. But by the end of those intervals, it should be really quite tough. Like, there's going to be some suffering going on.
Okay.
They build a lot of mental toughness as well as that physical capability.
Okay. So it should be hurting, basically. You should be feeling the lactic acid and being pretty out of breath by the end of those intervals.
Yeah, they'll be feeling the burn. Like, lungs and legs are definitely going to be going.
Okay.
Cool. And then that third session a week, maybe something a little lower intensity. John here is saying on the bike, but yeah, if he's not doing it, then obviously I'm going to say he needs to do some strength work.
Okay.
So either way, I'd like to think he's doing that as well, but we'll see.
Good stuff. Okay. Anything else you want to add on making good use of time, Ben?
Just have a plan. Have a plan. You know, if you're, you know, rolling into your garage after work to, oh, I'm going to do some training, and you're not quite sure what you're doing, you know, map out. Always have a plan. It doesn't matter if your program isn't perfect. There's no such thing as a perfect program. There's 100 ways to get fit for racing bikes, you know, just have a plan and stick to it. Okay, is what I would say, and that's the best way to maximize use of time.
Okay, yeah, and I find sticking it in your diary helps. Like, so it's kind of a commitment rather than fitting it in around stuff. Putting it in.
Yeah, for sure. Another, I guess, lifestyle tip like that is that a lot of people find if they try and do it early in the day, then that's good. You know, you can get it done early in the day before you get distracted, waylaid, or tired. Get up, get it done, and then you know you've done it for the rest of the day, and it puts you in a good mental state for the day. The other thing is, well, if you plan to do it in the morning and you're not quite right or you can't make it, you can always delay it later in the day. If you plan to do it in the evening and you delay it, well, you can't. You've missed it. You can't train that day. So morning training's good if if you can hack it.
Yeah, sounds good. Start a bit of an early start, but always good. Okay, right, next subject, tapering. So Cogfire and Olive Bikes, both on Instagram, got in touch asking questions around tapering for events. So Cogfire's talking around, you know, how late do you leave it to taper before an enduro race? When would your last ride or last session of the week be? And was also interested if practice laps are worth it for a big enduro day out when you're practicing Saturday and racing Sunday, whether that could tire you out. And then similar for Olive, I think, just trying to understand when tapering should start and what tapering really means.
Happy days. So yeah, tapering is basically jargon for sort of backing things off a bit so you feel fresh to race. And so again, the frustrating answer is it kind of depends. Okay. So it depends what you're used to, you know, and also how important the event is. So if you're, you know, if you're really into your racing and racing every weekend, then you can't really do a proper taper for all of them, because then you're going to spend the whole summer without training and ultimately you'll lose fitness. So first, for a proper taper, you should choose a few key events that are your most important ones, in which case a taper will probably be more over a week in duration, where you can do short, way shorter sessions, but keeping that high intensity. So you know, the week before a downhill race, you know, on the Tuesday or Wednesday, you might just go out for a gentle spin for an hour, during which you might do like a couple of 3-second sprints, and that's it. So those sprints give you that real high intensity, so we're maintaining that sprint ability, but as a whole, it's not a fatiguing session, and you finish it feeling really good. Now, I think what these guys are talking about more, rather than what I would call a taper, is they probably, like us, and work a normal job, and they race on a weekend. And so I think what they mean is, yeah, if I'm going to race on the weekend, when do I stop riding?
Yeah.
Or when do I back it off? And I'd say, again, the older you are or the less fit you are, the sooner you need to back it off. If you're really young, so if you're younger, like teens or 20s, or if you're very fit, then you might not need to at all, to be honest. You might just go, you know, just ride your bike a week, maybe go, you know, maybe have the Thursday off or something and then travel on the Friday. But yeah, so the older you are, less fit you are, the more time you should have off beforehand to feel fresh. But experiment. So if, you know, you've got a big weekend of riding, you're going away with your mates riding, you know, that's, you know, effectively kind of like a race weekend, you know, and it's demands on you physically, except for maybe the drinking or something. But so, you know, when next time you do that, you know, keep a little training diary of the week running up beforehand. And you could say, right, maybe I'll go for a ride Tuesday night after work, not too hard or anything. And then on Wednesday lunchtime from work, you're going to get in for like a sports massage or something like that. And then Thursday, you could do some mobility and you pack and sort all your kit out and you can prep all your food for the race weekend. You know, that's an ideal like week run up that somebody who works a 9-to-5 should be able to fit in. Now, as far as the other thing, so Cogfire asks, are practice laps worth it on a 6-day enduro, practice Saturday, race Sunday? And the first thing, like, when I made my notes here, was like, yes, it's fun.
Yeah, it's because, riding. Yeah, it's good.
It's riding, isn't it? Like, people always whinge about the cost of races and the thought of, like, you know, not riding as much, you know, when you paid all this money to race downhill or enduro. Even though I think they are good value and that the haters are going to hate. But anyway, yeah, the practice laps are worth it, because if you don't practice, you're at a massive disadvantage, I think. You know, when you come around that over that crest and you don't know what's there, you're scrubbing the brakes, and then all the other people in your category did practice it and they know that you don't have to brake. You know, it's as simple as that. You know where you can commit, you know how long the stages are, you know where the key features are. You might have a sneaky line here or there, because it's, you know, it's enduro, so it's got to be sneaky lines. And yeah, so on every level, I think it's worth it. The only time I'd say no is, yeah, like if you know, you're struggling for fitness, either in general, you know, you struggle, or maybe you're normally all right, but you've just had a nasty cold or something like that, and you're feeling pretty tired, but you still wanted to try and race. Get out there on a Saturday, do a couple of stages, and, you know, chill out. But that's the only time I'd say so, really. I'd always say practice. And if you think about it, if you're competitive and you want to do well at racing, then you need to go to races fit enough that, you know, you can practice 8 stages on a Saturday. You know, like I'm no amazing racer or anything, but when I've been racing at the like UK Gravity Enduros and, you know, and all that sort of stuff, sometimes, you know, we bang out 1.5 laps, you know, just because the riding's so good and you want to get the stages dialed in. And if you could be fit enough to do that, then that's a good thing.
And so I guess, yeah, people just need to work with their own fitness, really. If they're going to struggle to do 6 stages 2 days in a row, then maybe they need to back it off on the Saturday and not push too hard and take their time over it. Whereas if they've got, you know, full tank and they're feeling great, then maybe they can do, yeah, like you say, 6 or 8 stages on the Saturday.
Exactly. And it all comes down to that self-awareness I talked about earlier. And if you've never done, you know, if you're stepping it up and doing a bigger race than before, and like typically the national enduros in this country tend to be like 35K, 1500 meters of climbing 2 days in a row. Well, you know, maybe a month before you put something in the diary and you take yourself off somewhere and you go and do that, like with your mates or on your own. Can you do those days back to back? And you'll soon find out whether you can do it or not. And you'll also learn about how to feed yourself and how to, you know, look after yourself, because that's the important thing. Once you've done that big day of practice on the Saturday, you get back to the campsite or the B&B or whatever, then you've got to sort your kit out, you've got to sort your bike out, you need to eat, you need to ideally do some stretching or a bit of mobility work or whatever, and then you need to get to bed early, because generally you're up pretty early on the Sunday. So, you know, it just helps you to prepare properly.
Good advice. Nice one. All right, let's move on. So the next topic was injury recovery. We've got a couple of people asking about that. So Rob the Hungry Monkey on Instagram. So as someone who's still a bit injured from crashing 6 months ago but doesn't have a huge amount of money, how do you suggest going about rehab? How would you find a physio that knows about mountain bike related injuries and that you have faith in, that you're not just throwing money away? And then Graham McLean on Facebook added, how hard can you ride on an injury, and will riding make it heal faster or slower?
Okay, so yeah, Rob the Hungry Monkey, it's a strong Instagram name.
It is
there.
A strong,
good stuff, mate.
Yeah.
I might even just go and follow him and have a look at his profile just to see what sort of man gives himself that sort of name, but we'll see. Okay, so the real thing I can say is it's all about when you're looking for someone to give you treatment, you know, whether it's physio or whatever, it's got to be based on recommendations. You know, I'm married to a physio, so I, you know, and obviously I think, and she's obviously a very good physio and everything, but you need to, you know, it's a mixed bag. Just like any job, there are good ones and not so good ones, and there's some really amazing ones who'll make a massive difference to your you know, to your healing speed and your long-term outcomes, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, how do you find out? Talk to your riding friends. If your riding friends, or, you know, if you don't maybe have a massive bike group near you, then maybe go down the local bike shop. You know, these days, people are quite switched on, you know. So, like, if there's, like, a local sports physio who's interested in mountain biking, and chances are they might have even have a card in the bike shop, you know. So stop in the bike shop and say, look, you know, do you know a good physio who works with cyclists or whatever? Because yeah, other than that, I, you know, I'm not sure what to say, really. You just need to go about get some recommendations. If not, then just cold call some people and ask them some questions. Be a pain in the ass, ask them some questions, and then see how it goes, really.
What sort of questions would you ask, Ben? Are there any specific things you'd want to find out before you committed to them?
Yeah, I guess you just want to say, you know, have you worked with a mountain biker or cyclist before? maybe if maybe this person's got a specific, you know, they've got a specific injury, obviously, from a crash. And let's say it's a body part. Let's say it's an ankle. You know, some physios will specialise in certain things, like they'll be really good at backs or wrists and hands or ankles. So, you know, without, you don't want to give them the answer by saying, oh, I've hurt my ankle, you're good at ankles, because they'll say yes. But, you know, say, do you specialise in any, you know, body part or anything like that? You know, there might be something there. I think just have a conversation, really, is the best way to go.
Okay. Yeah, sounds good. And I guess the single track forum on their website can be quite useful as well. There's a lot of people who seem to use that regularly. And you might get some abuse, but you might get a useful answer. You never know.
I'm just not going to say anything, man. I'm just going to keep quiet about that forum.
All right.
Yeah. Let's move on swiftly to Graham there, who's asking how hard to ride an injury. And yeah, if in doubt, don't ride, is what I'd say. Always play the long game and just got to get professional advice. Like, I just can't say, to be honest. You know, will riding make it heal faster or slower? I mean, depends what it is, how bad it is. And yeah, it's too much to say, I'm afraid.
So, and is a physio the right person to speak to about that, to ask those questions?
I'd say so, yeah. Yeah, it most, you know, a physio clinic is where I would start. Or, you know, not everyone can afford to pay for private physio. So in which case the route in most areas is to go to your GP and get referred on for NHS physio.
Okay.
Which I think gets a lot of stick, but those NHS physios, half of them are doing the private work on the site as well. Anyway, yeah, it's the same physio you'd see in a clinic. You just might have to wait a little longer to see them. But it may be, you know, I'm sure you can find out how long's the waiting list locally. You know, I fell off over the summer. Hurt my wrist, and at the Bristol Royal Infirmary here, there was like a really, really short waiting list for the physio. It was awesome. So yeah, cool. People always assume it's going to be shit because they read the papers and think the NHS, you know, but actually it's, you know, you can get some really good physio in a really quick time if you're lucky.
Okay, good. Good advice. Right, the next one. This one's close to my heart. Older riders is the topic.
Yes.
So there was quite a few people chipped in here. So Rich Chow, old guy riding bikes, appropriate name for this question. Starling Cycles and Scott Douglas UK, all on Instagram, talking about, you know, what should we focus on for older riders. So I'm going to be 40 this year.
Oosh.
Yeah, the big one. So I need some help with this as well. So is there anything,
yes, mate,
anything you would, you know, you would recommend for older riders that's different to what you do with younger customers?
Yeah, so it's not different. It just takes more center stage. And that is to like really look after that like mobility, basically. You know, it's very much a case of use it or lose it. So if, you know, you're not moving lots, if you're not doing any mobility work, then you just gradually just get stiffer and stiffer. Most people do, especially if you work a desk job and drive loads and stuff like that. And it's that sort of mobility where, you know, all your joints can move through a full range. So, you know, you should be able to put your arms like straight up over your head without your ribs flaring up. You should be able to squat down with your feet flat on the floor and your bum should nearly be on the floor, like the way a baby sits. Or if you've ever been to like the third world, that's how, you know, that's how they will sit there. That's how we're designed to sit as humans, you know. And yeah, so basically really look after that mobility. And also as you get older, you know, you do lose, muscle. And so, yeah, I really think I'm saying this legitimately and not just because I'm biased as I'm a strength coach, but, you know, for me, it's that mobility and the strength, you know, keeping strong, so that you can then, yeah, you can do the things you want, you know, and keeping stronger. Well, there's no bad things that can come from it, assuming that you're training properly, and that you don't get injured or anything. If you're training in good form, then strength will benefit every part of your life, including the mountain biking. I guess the final thing I'd say is that for those guys, I think it's harder for the people who are maybe really, really fast and competitive racers when they were younger. You just need to be a little more accepting and a little more kind to yourself and to your body. Listen to what it's telling you when you're smashing yourself on training for hours and hours a week and it's screaming at you. You know, accept the fact that you might not be quite as fast, but still, you know, you can still be fast in your age group. You can still be a really amazing rider. You can still be really fit.
Cool. I was never that fast, so I don't have that problem to worry about. But on the mobility side of things, then what sort of stuff do you recommend? Are we talking like a yoga or a Pilates class, or what's good for that?
Yeah, like a yoga, you know, so a yoga or something is always good, you know, because it puts you in so many different positions and it can get you pretty strong to a point as well. So that sort of thing is great because often, for people to actually adhere to it and do it, they need to actually pay for a class and have it in their diary. If they say they're going to do it at home in the living room in front of the telly, then half the time it doesn't get done.
Yeah.
But if you are the sort of person who can do it at home, then you know there's loads of stuff out there. I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with the work of Abby, is it, on Pink Bike? Yoga 15 Abby on Pink Bike.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh yeah, there's a knowing yes there, another fan. But if you want to work at home, then pop that on the iPad or the telly or whatever, and work through some stuff there. There's so much information out there, which is almost a pain in the ass because you don't know what to choose. But like I said earlier, when I talked about making a plan, you know, look through some stuff on YouTube, find like a mobility routine. And even if it's not the perfect one, just follow it, just stick to it, you know, commit to a course of action and then stick to it. And just basically start. Well, I guess another good thing to do is to start with that self-awareness I talked about earlier. You know, if you know that your calves and ankles are really tight, then, you know, get on Google, right? Ankle mobility. There's loads of resources out there. Or if you really want to get into it and you really want to actually genuinely educate yourself, then there's an amazing book called Becoming a Supple Leopard, which paints quite a nice picture. And that's by a guy called Kelly Starrett, or Starrett, I'm not sure how you say that.
Starrett, yeah.
And he's a bit of a, Starrett is a bit of a mobility guru. And by that, read it, learn from it and stick to it, and you won't go far wrong.
Awesome. Yeah, it's on my list of books to read. I haven't actually got it yet, but it's on the list.
Yeah,
I'd also
it's
add,
really good.
I'll also add there's a book called Yoga for Cyclists. I can't remember who it's by, but I'll find it and put it in the show notes. But that's pretty
helpful.
Yeah,
I got that for Christmas a few years ago, actually, yeah.
Cool. So, yeah, I'll put links to Abby's stuff on Pink Bike, Yoga for Cyclists and Supple Leopard in the show notes so people can find that.
Yes, mate, that'd be awesome.
Good stuff. Righty-ho, let's move on. Next one is lower back pain, one that I've suffered from and I suspect quite a lot of people have. So Hand of John and Graham McLean both asked about lower back pain. They struggle to get rid of it. I think maybe getting it in different situations. So John's talking about getting it going downhill on long descents. And Graham's talking about getting it more on the faster flat sections where he wants to attack. Any thoughts on dealing with lower back pain?
Yeah. So the first thing I always say is get a diagnosis. You know, it may be, so it's one of two things. Is number one is there's an actual issue or an injury. And if it's a real pain that means he actually has to physically stop on a long descent, then I'd suggest that Hand of John there needs to go and get a diagnosis like we talked about earlier by going to see a physio or someone. For the more general, like achy lower back that may not be related to an injury, what you've got to look at is a few things. So number one is get stronger, okay? And I don't just mean like your legs and stuff, but stronger core, okay, and stronger bum, and then actually a stronger back as well. So if you think about that whole hip area and the lower back, the way I always describe it to people when I'm coaching them in the gym for deadlifts and stuff is that your bum and stomach or core when they're working well, they really protect your lower back. Okay, if your bum and stomach are either not very strong, or they're not really working very well, or you don't know how to use those muscles, then it means that the back has to do a bit more work, and it's a bit more liable to, you know, injury, or, you know, being uncomfortable in long descents and things like that. So what you've got to think about is, yes, number one is doing some sort of core training is always, you know, is a good advice for life in general, not just mountain biking. And, you know, I'm a big believer in starting with the basics, starting with things like planks, where you basically lie on your forearms and your feet with a really flat back position. Now, when you do this sort of thing, like when you start doing planks, a lot of people think, oh, I know how to do a plank. And then I see them show me in the gym, maybe when I start a new client, and it's horrible that it's all like bendy and stuff. There's actually, and people seem to have this idea that, oh, it's such a basic, really, you know, exercise. It's no good. It's so static. It doesn't relate to sport. But actually, so many people aren't able to control their posture through their spine. And actually putting them in that plank position and teaching them to hold that flat lower back rather than having a big arch there, and how to control their shoulder blades at the upper back. The plank is like massively underrated and incredibly valuable if you can learn to hold a really good solid plank position, basically. Mm-hmm.
How long would a good plank hold be if you've got a decent core? How long should you be able to sort of comfortably hold yourself in a correct plank position?
So as like a basic benchmark for the people I coach, I try and get them to 2 minutes. Well, I always get them to 2 minutes, basically.
Okay.
So once they can do a 2 minute plank, like rock solid with really good posture and positional awareness, then we, you know, then I know they're strong enough to push harder in other areas, and we do more variety of core exercise and things like that. They'll do the other core stuff as well, because let's face it, doing planks is pretty boring.
Yeah.
But so they do other stuff as well. But once they're hitting that 2 minute mark, you know that, yeah, they've got that sort of base strength endurance there in their core, and then you can push things a bit harder in other areas.
All righty. Good, good. Anything else on lower back pain? Are there any sort of stretches or anything that can help with it?
So you know how I described earlier that sort of deep squatting position, like a baby, how a baby squats down or a toddler squats down?
Yeah.
So that sort of position there is just so valuable for looking after your like hips, and it really also helps to like decompress the lower back. So as you sit down that deep, it kind of lengthens that lower back out. And for a lot of people, that can give them a bit of relief. So you can do that when you get out of the car to go riding, or at the end of a day at the office, you can spend a bit of time. I just call it a baby squat to the people I coach. Spend a bit of time in that position. And actually, it's something you should try, a position you should try and get into, sorry, every day if you can. The benefits are massive. You know, if you can get into that deep baby squat position a few times a day and spend a bit of time down there, then it's going to have massive benefits for like your knees, hips, lower back, and that sort of thing.
And so that's a really deep squat, kind of ass as close as it will go to the ground. Heels still on the ground, or are they allowed to lift?
Yes, yes. Heels on the ground, heels okay. on the ground.
Yeah.
And if you find your knees are like really collapsing in, and you're like the arches of your feet are like rolling inwards, then really get the elbows inside those knees and push the knees out there to try and keep those shins a little more vertical. But yeah, heels on the floor. If you're unable to do that, then you can start off by popping something under your heels there, you know, like a couple of centimeters, just to raise the heel. But over time, you should aim to do that on flat ground.
Okay, good, good stuff. Right, let's move on to, we're pretty short of time, but we can maybe get through one or two of these other questions. So there was an interesting one here from Hodogram on Instagram. He asked, what are the most useful performance metrics for mountain bike racing? So
Hodogram's, yeah, wants to geek out on the numbers a bit then.
Yeah, so, looks like it.
Yeah. So what does he say? Roadies refer to 20-minute FTP tests, 3-minute max power tests, watts per kilo ratios, but how relevant are these for enduro and DH? And what are some good benchmarks? So first of all, quickly to tell you what those tests and what those things mean is, so these are sort of tests that, you know, I do tests like this with my guys. I use a watt bike at the gym, so it measures the power output of the rider, both, you know, that second and like averaged out over periods of time as well. So roadies, they refer to they do these FTP tests, and that's your functional threshold power, which you might also know as your threshold or your lactate threshold, and effectively that's the power output that you can do for a 1 hour max effort time trial. Right. Is the actual definition. But because it's really hard to do and incredibly tiring to do those 1 hour efforts, you can actually do a 20 minute test, like max effort time trial, and then you just take it's just a percentage of that gives you your functional threshold power.
Okay.
And then you've also got things like 3 minute max power test, which is exactly what it says, like your average power of 3 minutes, which is like a VO2 max test, which is pretty disgusting. It's a good, you know, if you want to make someone puke in the bin at the gym, then that's it. And we've got to see them go pale, and that's a good one. And then he also talks about watts per kilo ratios. So that one is a massive one for those roadies and for like cross country racers and stuff like that, because that determines how quickly you can climb. The more power you can put out for your body weight, the more quickly you can climb.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, that watts per kilo is a lot less relevant the flatter it is, or also if you're going downhill already. So on the flat road sprinting, that's why like you see Tour de France sprinters that tend to be pretty big dudes, you know, they're way heavier than the climbers. Because for them, it's all about the watts, not about the kilos, mm-hmm. Because they're not overcoming gravity. So it's all about that power. Now, how relevant are these for enduro and DH? Now, for a start, you have to separate enduro and DH because their demands are really very different, I think, because of that whole climbing element on enduro and also the length of some stages. You know, look at the World Series. Some of them were like 25 minutes this year. So for enduro, that functional threshold power is certainly relevant, because the higher your functional threshold power is, your FTP is, then effectively the easier those climbs are going to be for you. And so, you know, what you're looking to do is, yeah, push that functional, that FTP up, which then effectively, if you maintain the same body weight or even get lighter, improves your watts per kilo, because then you get to the top of the hill easier, expended less energy, feeling fresher, ready to race. Because yep. It's not one on the way up, it's one on the way down, as everyone knows. For DH, you know, it's that sprint repeat capability is the key, you know. So yes, you need a big sprint, you need to bang out some watts there. Most of those elite men on the World Cup circuit are going to be in or about the 1,800 to 2,000 watts, I'd imagine, for a lot of those guys. They're going to be hitting those sort of numbers for a few seconds. But even that isn't as critical as the ability to repeat that, those big efforts. You know, if you can do 1,700 watts 6 or 7 times in a couple of minutes, then that's, you know, that's obviously really good, being able to put down that sort of power again and again and again. And also remembering that in between those bursts of sprinting, you're not resting. You're in your riding position and you're riding at 100% trying to win that race. Mm-hmm. Now, because of the skill-based nature, and really there's so many things out of your control in mountain biking as a coach, and when you're looking at numbers and stuff like that, that I'm not really a big one for looking at benchmarks, i.e. you need to be at this many watts per kilos or whatever. What I'm more about is taking an athlete or rider and seeing where they're at right now through testing, and then trying to improve that, you know, because there's no point aiming for some certain, you know, And then we set goals, sorry, to work towards, but saying, well, if you want to be a pro downhill racer, then you need to hit this many watts. Well, that's rubbish, because if you can go around the corner better than anyone else, then even if you're 200 watts off, you're probably still going to win. Yeah, because it's that sort of sport, isn't it? So I'm not really into benchmarks, but if you are into watts per kilo and benchmarks, then there's loads of stuff on the British Cycling website, which is obviously more based on roadies and stuff. But it will let you compare yourself to a larger population of riders.
Okay. And have you got just a rough figure for the 20-minute FTP for someone who's kind of reasonably competitive in the enduro side of things? Is that a number that you'd know?
Yeah, so let's have a think. So probably a good place to be for functional threshold power would be around the 300 watts, basically.
Okay.
For FTP, for racing enduro. Now, obviously, it's going to vary a bit of body weight and stuff like that, but it's a nice round number, and that's definitely a good number to aim for.
Okay.
And there'll be guys on the World Series and in the UK who'll be over that, and there'll be some who are a bit under that who may be a bit lighter. But, yeah, I'd say 300 watts is a good place to aim for.
All right, good stuff. Okay, one last question. I think this is kind of an interesting one because I'm not totally sure how this stacks up. But Bikes, Boards, Blethers asks, can road miles make up for a lack of mountain bike miles? So I guess if you've got an hour, are you better off going out on the mountain bike than you are going out on the road bike?
So, yeah, I mean, they can in the fitness sense, but obviously, as we all know, they're not going to help you with your bike skills. Okay, and you know, most of the guys I train are enduro and downhill, and just, you know, trail riders and people who race for fun, and it's skills that make the difference at the races. Having said that, there's no doubt that, you know, riding road bikes indoors, outdoors can have like a massive benefit for your fitness. It's really time efficient, because even when it's pretty shitty, you don't have to like jet wash everything off like you do with the mountain bike. You don't have all the muddy kit. So when time's limited, the road bike is more efficient. And the other thing that you get on the road bike is, you know, especially when you're talking about trying to push up your FTP that we just talked about, is that it's a lot more controlled environment. So if you're trying to push up the FTP and you want to do some like 10 minute efforts or whatever on some climbs, then on the road, generally, you know, apart from like in town where you've got the traffic lights, it's a bit more of a controlled environment where you can get very specific work done as long as it's safe, you know. Compared to the mountain bike, tends to be a bit, you know, there are fire roads and stuff, but it tends to be a bit more messed up, and it can be harder to structure your training, because all you want to do is just ride the single track. So
cool. So yeah, they have their place in training then, but mountain biking's more fun. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, skills pay the bills for those top right racers, don't they? So
for sure.
But yeah, get out there, you know, bikes are bikes. You know, I'm no hater. I love riding any bike, really. And you know, if you live, or you know what, there's a lot of people who don't live in places with great mountain biking, you know. I'm pretty lucky where I live, but you know, if you live somewhere that's flat as a pancake and you have to drive an hour to get some decent riding, then get out on that roadie, you know, get some miles in, and you know, get some sprints done and stuff like that. Yeah, do it.
Cool. Happy days. Some awesome advice there, Ben. Thank you very much. I think hopefully some good answers for people and some good information for them to go out and get fit for 2018 riding and racing. So yeah, thanks for your time.
Yeah, I hope so. Hope so. Yeah, just one extra thing to add there is that obviously with this going out in January, lots of people are going to be thinking now about their New Year training. And I've just got a little special offer for your listeners. If you head over to mtbstrengthfactory.com, you can get £5 off of one of my online strength programs. So it's either a kettlebell program or a bodyweight program. And to get £5 off, all you do is enter downtime, one word, lowercase, no spaces. Enter that at the checkout and you get £5 off. And that'll give you a really nice structured training plan for either body weight or kettlebell training. And if you think it's $100, then you get your money back, but you won't. Don't worry.
Awesome. So that's about a third off, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's about a third off the price of the body weight one. The kettlebell one's a bit more, but yeah, it's about a third off that one. So it's good value, and it's good value anyway. Plus, at the moment, it also comes with a free copy of my nutrition guide. So if you're feeling a bit porky after Christmas, then it's definitely worth checking out. And that's only valid, sorry, I forgot to say, until the end of January 2018. Cool. So for those people listening to this way in the future, I'm sorry, no discount for you.
Nice one. Thanks, mate. Really appreciate that. Thanks for your time today. And yeah, we'll talk to you again at some point in the future, I'm sure.
No worries, mate. Thanks for having me, mate, and take it easy. Cheers.
Wicked. Cheers, man. Well, that's it for our Ask the Coach special. I hope you found it useful. If you did, head over onto social media and let us know what you thought. Okay, we've got another great episode coming up on the 16th of January, but until then, get out and ride.